At the root of our being, it is God's thought penetrating our intellect. He is forcing it to enlarge its capacity, so that he can communicate himself to it more fully. It is God pressing on our heart, so that he can give his love to us more perfectly. God is thus within us, knowing and loving himself. He wants to make us share in his living knowledge and love of himself. That is the reason for this desire to know and love God, that permeates the souls of his friends. You are impatient for more perfect union with God. How could it be otherwise? But be patiently impatient. Realize that your desire, although it cannot be satisfied on earth, will be progressively more fully satisfied and more intense, in the measure that you come closer to God. Saint Gregory of Nyssa based his whole spirituality on the following affirmation: finding God consists in seeking him incessantly. And he explains what he means. Times 4. Indeed, seeking and finding are not two distinct acts. For success in seeking consists in the search itself. The soul's desire is satisfied by the very fact that it remains insatiable. For truly seeing God consists in never being satiated with desiring him. Are you going to object, but then, when shall we ever find rest? You will find less and less, as you approach God. Just as the speed of a falling stone accelerates as it plunges downward, so, too, the soul's upward flight intensifies the closer it comes to God. There is no worse mistake than to consider perfection, in our earthly condition, as a repose of desire in the stable possession of God. To the contrary, it is an active search, movement, and aspiration toward him. Quoting again from Saint Gregory of Nyssa. Because of the transcendence of the riches the soul discovers, in the measure that it progresses, it always seems to be only at the start of its ascent. That is why the word repeats arise. To the soul that is already awake, and come. To the one that has already come. In truth, the one who is really arising must always continue to arise, and the one who runs toward the Lord will never lack much space in which to run. And so the one who is ascending never stops, proceeding from beginning to beginning through beginnings that never end. Whoever is joined to the Lord becomes one spirit with him. I Cor 6:17. Our desire to find God, that led us to mental prayer, did not lie. The eagerly desired union becomes a reality close at hand, deep within us. To find God. This is what we must expect of mental prayer, and this is what it holds out for us. 88 I want to learn how to pray. Mental prayer is indeed a holy place where God speaks to man's heart, and embraces him with his powerful and tender love. 89 Meditation before a portrait. God does not wait until the end of a life of mental prayer, to manifest his active presence in a praying soul. Sometimes he manifests himself very early. Mystical experience is not reserved for the saints alone. Those who discredit it are to be pitied, and even more those to whom it is offered, and who spurn it. 90 Mysticism, the person to whom mystical experience is offered, sees clearly that mental prayer consists less in doing than in being. This means being with God, attentive to him present in the soul. 91 To be or to act, unquestionably, asceticism is needed to arrive at this experience. The converse is still truer, the mystical graces are powerful helps in the practice of the virtues. They enable our love for God to free itself gradually from our love of self. 92 Said, the mystical graces cause a mysterious knowledge of the Lord to burgeon within us, provided, of course, that our intellect humbles itself before the lofty incomprehensibility of God. 93 You will see my back cf. X 33:23, the mystical graces are active in uniting us to God. This union consists essentially in the fusion of our innermost will with the will of God. 94 The mental prayer of a woman of the people, The stages on this road toward union with God are not the same for everyone, but progress always involves the development of a more ardent and selfless love. 95 Beacons along the road. In any event, the union will not be consummated until we have yielded all the room within us to God. 96 It's you, when that day comes, we shall be introduced into the communion of love between the Father and the Son, that eternal feast whose bard and witness, in heaven and on earth, is the Holy Spirit. 97 God's rest, Heb 4:10. 88. I want to learn how to pray. You say, I would like to know how to pray. Thank God for this wish. It can only come from Him. Even so, you must ask yourself why you want to learn to pray. An old French story will explain my thinking to you better than a long discourse. In ancient times, there were many hermits living in the forests of the Vosges Mountains. One of them had a great reputation for holiness. Hunters claimed that they had seen wild animals, bears, wild boars, roe deer, gathered and as though recollected before the entrance of his cave, while he sang the Lord's praises. The inhabitants of the valley were no longer surprised, when they noticed a strange glow in the sky at night above the mountain where the man of God lived. Quite often, young men of the region asked him to take them in. Didn't other hermits live with disciples whom they initiated into contemplation? But they all received the same negative answer. All but one. This privileged young man revealed the reason for his good fortune, shortly after his master's death. When I was 18 years old, I presented myself, and requested the favor of dwelling close to him. When he asked me why, I answered, "Because I want to learn how to pray." These words kindled a gleam of tenderness in the old hermit's eyes. Then he asked me, "And why do you want to learn to pray?" "Because that is the loftiest knowledge. I would like very much to take you in, but I can't," he answered with some sadness. I returned to see him 3 years later. He received me with a father's affection, and again asked me, "Why do you want to learn how to pray?" "So I can become a saint." I was convinced that this time, he would accept me. Wasn't this the loftiest conceivable reason? But once again he refused, and I left in despair. I went back to work in the fields. And yet the desire to pray haunted me more than ever, from morning until night. Sometimes I would weep, when I thought of the man who lived up there on the mountain, in intimate friendship with his God. One Christmas Eve, I suddenly got up. I was absolutely sure that this time, he would accept me. When I arrived, he was praying and didn't notice me. I waited a long time. Gradually, my impatience quieted down. When he turned around, he didn't seem at all surprised by my presence. I began to speak, without giving him time to ask any questions. "I want to learn how to pray because I want to find God." Then he opened his arms and welcomed me. To find God is the purpose of true prayer. It makes prayer irresistible. The father cannot turn away from the child who is seeking him. The child finally understands that he must no longer run from the father who is pursuing him. What does it mean to find God? Grace gradually causes this need to mature in the Christian heart. Those who have found God would love to disclose their secret to us, but they are up against an impossible obstacle. Neither words nor concepts can express the intimacy of the soul with its God. They are reduced to assuring us that the path of prayer is not a blind alley. It opens up into a great meadow, and culminates in an ineffable, divine experience. 89. Meditation before a portrait. Do you remember the page of the Bible where Moses is tending his sheep on the slopes of Horeb, and stops before a bush that is burning without being consumed? He trembles with the sacred fear. Then he steps forward to observe the prodigy, but a voice rises from the flames that stops him in his tracks, "Come no nearer. Remove the sandals from your feet, for the place where you stand is holy ground." Ex 3:5. Prayer is a sacred place, the holy ground where God dwells. There he waits for man, speaks to him, and embraces him with his strong and tender love. Since prayer is God's activity even more than man's, it is at least partly beyond the scope of rational inquiry. It is a mystery. However, we are certainly permitted to seek to understand prayer better. That is even one of the loftiest goals of the human intellect. But to succeed, we must renounce all hope of wresting its ultimate secret. Rather, we must follow the guidance of the Holy Spirit and advance humbly, in our bare feet. I cannot hope to convince you of the importance of prayer, as long as you persist in being an old rationalist, refusing to rise above the level of philosophy. At your next visit, I shall show you a painting of Benedict Joseph Larbour, the beggar saint. Perhaps this picture will be more convincing than my arguments. It has always made a deep impression on me. I find it extraordinarily moving. It represents the saint at prayer, his arms folded, his head slightly bowed, and his eyelids lowered. There is a feeling of intense recollection. Benedict Joseph Larbour is a total stranger to the world around him. He is completely centered within himself, with the doors of his senses carefully closed. What is going on within this private sanctuary? Obviously, that is beyond the reach of our eyes. Even so, looking at this picture, we can glimpse the saint's secret. There is an indefinable halo of tenderness and humility that envelops his person, and a light that seems to illumine his face from within. There can be no doubt that this man's heart is experiencing something very important and enviable. We are impelled to kneel before Benedict Joseph at prayer, because we are certain that the God who lives in his soul is speaking words to him that make him blessed, words very sweet to hear. This picture taught me much more about prayer than reading many books. Perhaps it will speak to you, too. 90. Mysticism. My dear father, I cannot hide from you that last Wednesday evening I was astonished, to put it mildly, at the indifferent tone, bordering on ridicule, with which you spoke of mysticism and mystics. I felt that it was a kind of profanation. I thought of our great Catholic saints, most of whom, we know, were mystics. As I watched these students listen with such trust to their young chaplain, I felt there was a danger that you might disorient some of those who were aspiring to an encounter with God. In listening to you, they could be led to despair of finding God in a Catholic religion where everything was reduced to rational explanations, and to a morality of action. The infatuation of certain young people and famous writers with the religions of India, the success of various cults and the unbelievable prestige enjoyed in Paris by some seer from the Orient, often have no other explanation than the disparagement of the mystical life by so many Catholic priests and lay people. Do not retort that, sooner or later, every confessor has had a bone to pick with false mystics. I am well aware of that. But do false Rembrandts necessarily discredit the authentic works of the Dutch master? It goes without saying that we must distinguish between genuine and false mystics, and correctly define the word whose real meaning is so often distorted. Passing over subtleties, I shall say that the true mystic perceives the active presence of God at the center of his soul, and receives various inspirations from this presence, to prayer, love, action and self-sacrifice. Like Saint Paul, he can say, "The Spirit himself gives witness with our spirit that we are children of God." R.M. 8:16. Saint Paul reveals himself to be a great mystic on every page of his epistles. He is aware of being caught up by the power of God, of being led by his Spirit. He declares to us that this is the hallmark of the children of God. All who are led by the Spirit of God are sons of God. R.M. 8:14. You see that I am not including, in the definition of mystical experience, various extraordinary phenomena, ecstasies, visions and revelations. They can occur in an authentic mystical life, but they are not what essentially constitutes this life. You may object, Mysticism is the consecration of holiness.